Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in public health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu. From Northeast Public Radio, this is the Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press.
So it's an opportunity for a half hour of commentary analysis, and maybe if we do extraordinarily well and better than usual, you'll have some insight into the media issues of the week.
That's what you think.
I hope so. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union. That's Alan Shartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio. And, of course, here is Ira Fussfeld, longtime publisher of the Daily Freeman in Kingston, New York.
Hello, Rex.
Wonderful to see you. Wonderful to see you.
Well, hello, Rex, but no hello, Alan.
Oh, well, hello, Alan. Alan's a new granddad for the second time.
My goodness.
Congratulations.
Isn't that something?
Thank you.
Yes, that's a very good thing. I mean, you're hardly old enough to be a grandfather, of course.
Well, I don't look it.
Well, I'm younger than you are, and I have three grandchildren.
And you look it.
I look it. I feel it.
Oh, good. It's nice that we're off to a nice start here, you know. All right. Well, the White House is happy, and we'll explain why shortly. But first, we just have to take a little piece of mail from a reader. Chris from Hamlin, New York, writes that Chris was listening to the Media Project over the weekend and heard a piece of mail that we read from someone in what I said was the town of Riga in western New York. FYI, Chris writes, the name shares an anomaly of pronunciation common to place names out here. The letter I is often pronounced I rather than E. Hence, Riga is pronounced Riga rather than Riga. And Medina is Medina rather than Medina. And Castile is Castile, not Castile. Lima, not Lima. And Chile is not Chile. It's Chile.
I say, let's call the whole thing off.
Anyway, Chris is very kind, writes, you guys are doing a great job. Keep up the good work, notwithstanding mispronunciation of, I wouldn't have come across the Chile. That would be really difficult for Chile.
Right.
Keep those cards and letters coming, media@wamc.org, if you need to share your thoughts. So here we go. Politico reports that Donald Trump and his allies believe that he's gained a tactical advantage in his war with the media as he escalates his attacks on the failing media. His words, Trump and his allies are increasingly convinced that recent evidence, including the retracted CNN piece on an aspect of the Russia investigations, will prove to skeptical voters that the mainstream media has a vendetta against the administration.
And this, of course, is why you never want to make a mistake. And why, when you make a mistake, you really do have to be almost brutal in what happened. A whole bunch of heads have fallen as a result of this. Because what happens, obviously, is that Trump, who is a famous liar and prevaricator, and who makes stuff up all the time, now takes this and says, you see, this is proof of the way that the media, who are the enemy of the people, behave. Now, enemy of the people, you know, I kid around a lot on this show, and I enjoy doing that, especially when you guys are here. But this is serious stuff, dead serious, because this is the way dictators, would-be dictators and others, take over governments. You take on the most cherished and most important institutions, one of which, of course, is the media. People may not like it, but it is incredibly important that somebody holds politicians and lying politicians like Trump's feet to the fire.
I can't agree more. Even though I'm retired and I don't have to deal with this anymore on a day-to-day basis, there's been nothing in his presidency that has aggravated me more than this attack. He has done more damage to the First Amendment and to the concept of free press in this country than anybody that I'm aware of historically. It's something that's going to be lasting long after he's gone. As Alan just pointed out, the press never should have wanted to make mistakes, but mistakes can be made, and now they're being used to prove a negative that is just made up out of whole cloth. I'm almost too mad to speak cogently about it. It's such an aggravating circumstance. And of course, when he declares, "I don't see them making an apology," whoever them is in a particular day, when was the last time or any time you've ever seen Trump or many other politicians ever apologize for anything?
But Trump's worse than many other politicians.
By far.
You know,
there's never been one like him, in fact. I don't know if you saw the New York Times opinion piece that filled a full page of Donald Trump's lies, just cataloging the lies since he announced for president.
Stunning.
Digitally, it was actually linked to the actual examples of what they were talking about, but it filled a full page in small type. And yet his base doesn't accept that. His base will see that and say, well, that's the biased New York Times coming against him. It is just what he said more than a year ago, that he could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and his base wouldn't desert him.
But to your original point where he's claiming to, or he and his supporters are claiming victory, I have a question for you guys. The other day in the White House press briefing, one of the reporters finally got up and talked back to Sarah Huckabee Sanders, who, by the way, next to Spicer, is one of the most unqualified people I've ever seen in that job. But
sort of like the party planner who's now running the HUD regional office between New York and New Jersey.
There seems to be maybe an incremental feeling among the press corps that they've got to hit back at these allegations. And the question that I have to you is, do you agree with that as a strategy? If you were sitting in the White House briefing room, would you start talking back and say, stop the insanity, or do you feel that could be counterproductive in terms of you're looking too defensive, or the public doesn't like you already, and you're going to be you're whining? Those sorts of questions.
One day, I gave a teacher hell because the teacher was wrong in class, and I came home, and my mother said, "Don't be fresh. Don't be fresh. There are a lot of American people who think that a reporter who talks back is being fresh, that they're out of place, that they shouldn't do it." Now, there's a second part of this. You know, if you're a smart reporter and you want to get ahead, you do something like this because, it gives you the limelight. People pat you on the back. There is a potential for self-servingness in this. But let's remember what's happening here. The entire press briefing system is now under a fire. We are seeing that they don't want it on television anymore. The last thing a potential dictator ever wants is for people to know what's going on. And Rex, I think you said it before, and you are right, this is the worst, but the base sticks with them. Hey, okay, here we go. Hitler's base stood with them too. You know, and it's not a huge base. The guy lost the popular vote. 15% of the people like his health care bill or the bill that's there. So, in fact, if there's bad news, they don't want people to know it.
The difficulty is when you push back, does it not, as you say, confirm the people's beliefs that you're out to get him? I believe that it's true that the reporter who stood up and spoke back to Sarah Huckabee Sanders was the Breitbart reporter.
No, the Breitbart reporter asked the question. He teed up a question that enabled Huckabee Sanders to then blast CNN in the wake of their retraction and the firings. And then this reporter, who's from a small newspaper in the suburbs of Washington, was the one who stepped forward.
We're reporting fake stuff. Yeah. Why are you taking us all on this way? And she said, "I don't see it that way at all." And she just insisted on her straight line that everything is that the media is out to get him. Look, the fact is, I have to say that of course reporters are going to be offended by that kind of behavior, but they are bending over backwards to be professional and to be fair, honestly. And all those people, as this young reporter pointed out, these are people just trying to do their job. The White House, I guess, Sarah Huckabee Sanders is trying to do her job too, which is to sling a lot of stuff and see what will work, because her job, as she's interpreted it, is to help Donald Trump succeed politically.
Well, I don't know if she's interpreted it, but Trump certainly has sent them out to do that, and that is not their job. Their job is to inform the public through the press what the president thinks and what the president is up to, not to get up at the podium and talk about how she believes and he believes that the press is fake and unfair, etc. It's just, I mean, the last one that I can think who did that on a regular basis was Ron Ziegler.
Ron Ziegler, that's what I thought you were going to say. You know, it's interesting. I think Alan's
He worked for Nixon.
For Nixon.
I think Alan is right that this has a it is in effect an unpatriotic thing to do because you're tearing down the institution of the First Amendment. And if this were put up to a vote of the American people, the First Amendment would have restrictions on it. And there is a little glimmer of hope here, and that is that there is a new Gallup poll talking about confidence in the media, which shows that over the past year, American confidence in the media, while still low, has risen somewhat. A year ago, Americans with a great deal or quite a lot of confidence in their newspapers were at 27%. So that's a gain of a third over the course of a year. So this could be that people are reacting to the role of the press in exposing the lies that are pervasive coming from the White House. And it is interesting that still having 27% confidence in newspapers, 24% say they have confidence in television news, 16% have high confidence in news on the internet, which is a different kind of a phrase because it comes from somewhere, you know. But anyway, it's worth assessing.
Well, I have a second part to that question I asked before. If you were the news directors or the executives at the cable networks in particular, would you defy the order of the White House that these press briefings are not going to be shown live or with any video? Would you turn your cameras on?
They're not going to be in the room. They're not going to allow cameras in the room.
But
I think that's the problem.
But there was one reporter who did the audio, turned the audio on and said, I'm not going to take this, and turned the audio on. And they found that reporter.
The same thing happened to PBS. They were streaming it live with
video.
Yeah,
that's who I'm thinking
of,
actually.
And after six minutes, they turned it off.
So, because there is no constitutional requirement that there be briefings in the White House. And therefore, this is just custom. So the White House can throw you out of the press briefing room and say...
And you know why they're doing it. However, without going further on that, no program would be complete without a little sex. I'm going to raise the report this as we sit here this morning that the president noticed an Irish reporter, good-looking Irish reporter, and made a pass, as the late Ethel Pearls would say, passed a comment, don't you know, about, you know, her good looks. And this is being taken up by the feminist causes now, who's saying, hey, how can we as women ever be treated the same way men are if we're being singled out for our attractiveness? What do you think? Now, it has to do with the media. I know you always raise
What would people think about Nancy Pelosi looking at some young man reporter and I don't know what the president's exact words were, but if Nancy Pelosi said, wow, you're some hot something, aren't you? Wouldn't that be really grossly inappropriate?
Yeah, no, it would be. I don't think you can argue it on the merits. I have to say that Bill Clinton and others have done the same. Obama did. He said this is the prettiest or something like that about
Kamala Harris, who's now the U.S. Senator from
U.S. Attorney.
He made a sort of passing reference to her. He was talking about her and said, and she's also the best looking attorney general.
Are you offended by that, Rex?
I'm not. And she took it, he called her and apologized, and she took it graciously. It is a byproduct of generations of the way that men and women have interacted.
More than generations, since the cave, I believe. And so, you know, there's always going to be a tension between men and women because there's mutual sexual attraction. And that's a tough one because clearly we get to be Homo sapiens for a good reason. And that is that we have controlled those impulses.
Well, fortunately for the Irish female reporter, when Trump made that remark, his hands were visible on the desk, and they were nowhere near her private parts. He could not grab her.
Which is the evolution, of course, of the famous pussy hats.
Yes, it also suggests that this particular transgression, if we will agree that it was a transgression, he has...
Well, don't you? I mean, you raise it, you say, if we will
Well,
agree.
My point
Do
is that he
Ira,
has,
you will answer yes or no.
He has elevated the level of distaste in office to such a degree that this is something that people don't even think about anymore.
Well, people thought about
your answer to your question is I don't. In today's day and age, it was inappropriate. It was inappropriate, but there are those who would argue that certain things that used to happen in the workplace that were perfectly innocent, like saying, "Oh, you look nice today," are not allowed because of transgressors who have meant it in the wrong way.
So this is the Media Project from Northeast Public Radio. That's Ira Fussfeld, Alan Shartok. I'm Rex Smith. We should talk a little bit about Sarah Palin, which we alluded to early in the program as one of the the things that is delighting the president. Not only did we have the incident of three investigative reporters for CNN resigning when a story that they wrote was withdrawn, but we have Sarah Palin suing the New York Times over an editorial that was published in mid-June after the shooting of Congressman Steve Scalise. The Times editorial made reference to the fact that it's a product of the fraught political and policy climate now in the country. And the one of the illustrations was the editorial said that before Gabby Giffords was shot, a political action committee associated with Sarah Palin had, quote, circulated a map that showed the targeted electoral districts of Ms. Giffords and 19 other Democrats under stylized crosshairs. Now, the difficulty is there is a connection between the shooting and the action of Palin's pack was never established. And I think actually there is some peril to the New York Times in this point, in the sense of peril being that they may well have to go before a jury in this libel case because of the way that American libel law is set up. It has to be established under New York Times v. Sullivan that the media acted with the standard reckless disregard for the truth or actual malice. She's claiming actual malice, but I think she could get it on reckless disregard because it's just terribly sloppy on the part of the Times to have claimed this.
Well, the problem with covering Donald Trump and going further and further is that sooner or later you are tempted to say something which may be indefensible. And I think that's what all of us who are adopting this mode, and I am one because I really feel this president is just an ogre, could you say ogre? I suppose you
but
could.
You probably wouldn't have a year ago about a president of the United States, no matter how bad you
I would not have. I would not have. But okay, so, but you have to be very careful, obviously.
Yeah. Well, but I agree with Rex.
Ordinarily,
you would think that somebody, particularly a public figure, suing a newspaper about an editorial and claiming that he or she was libeled would be a no-brainer, that there's too many protections for the press and against a public figure. But I think the Times is extraordinarily sloppy on this editorial. They did a correction, and even the correction was not good enough.
When people write to me and they say, well, I'm sorry if you took it that way.
I still think it will be very difficult to prove malice. The other mm-hmm. standard may not be defensible.
But here's the thing, Ira. The New York Times has plenty of money, the best libel lawyers in the world defending it. But how about all those newspapers that don't have those things, who know that there's going to be $100,000, $200,000, million-dollar bill if they have to defend something like this, and that they might lose?
Well, but the more often, yes, and something could happen such as with Gawker, when the opponent simply overwhelmed them with money thrown out against them. And I believe they're using the same lawyer.
Sarah Palin's law team is now headed by the same guy who just brought down Gawker, yes.
But, the New York Times, I think one of the first mistakes they made, and far be it for me to normally criticize the New York Times, is that they wrote that editorial the same day as the event that sparked the editorial.
Yeah, put it in a desk for an hour.
Really? I mean, when we were writing editorials at my newspaper, I can't think of any time except maybe 9/11 when we wrote an editorial immediately. We usually gave it a day to ruminate so that we could ruminate on it. And I think that's a big mistake because it lends itself to a sloppy ending.
Yeah. You know, interestingly, on libel cases, almost never does a libel case against a media organization go to a jury. The vast, vast majority of them are dismissed on summary judgment. And so you're before a judge making an argument saying, judge, this doesn't meet the standard established in the law because the standard is very high. This is one where a judge might be inclined to say, you know, there are facts here that could potentially be seen as libelous, so let's let this go to a jury. And if you get a jury in this environment, this anti-media environment right now, hearing a libel case brought by whoever it may be, the jury is going to be disinclined to support freedom of speech.
And it depends what the location of that jury is.
Yeah.
I remember when they went after the guy from Hustler,
Flint.
Flint. I think they went to Kansas, where the jury outcome is obviously going to be very different than if they were doing it in New York.
Or Bill Cosby. where they move the jury just to another entire locality. But, you know, if the New York Times loses this case, the loss will not be felt so badly in the pocketbook, but it will be felt in journalism circles all over the country, and it will enable Trump to do what you started the program talking about, which is to point to the unfairness and the fake news aspect of journalism, and it will it will just do an untold amount of damage to the industry.
Actually, Rex did not start the program talking about that. He started talking in the program about a place called Riga, which is not Riga, which may just fit in here because that might be the place to move the trial to.
There you go.
Oh, I'm sure they like the New York Times there. Where did they say where Riga is? What part of the state?
It's in Western New York. Yeah. We managed to pull that out of the fryer. Pull the fat out of the fire. Is that how that saying goes?
Well, anyway, the chestnuts out of the fire.
Figure that out during the. Help us out with these little sayings, folks. So here's just a fun thing because before we leave the show, having to do with the outrage that people sometimes feel when a critic is critical. The Chicago Sun-Times theater critic has panned a play. The critic, whose name is Hedy Weiss, a longtime theater and dance critic, did a review of a new play by Steppenwolf Theater, which is an esteemed theater out there. And it is a review that provoked outrage and referred to the simplistic, wholly generic characterization of a racist white cop being wrongheaded and self-defeating. What do you do? How do you deal with the fact that you hire a critic to express a point of view, and then if the criticism is intense, people are outraged?
Well, you know, this has been going on for years. I remember when the Times, because there was so much power in the Times reviewer, that they hired two, one for the weekends and one for the other time. And often they would disagree, which is good. I've had long-time problems with critics, especially in towns where the critic is the only voice. Now, of course, let's just take the Berkshires, where we have wonderful theater, where the Boston Globe covers it, the New York Times covers it, mm-hmm. and the local paper covers it. But everybody reads the local paper. And so I think they may do a fine job, but they have tremendous power. And that power in some ways ought to be mitigated. I don't know how.
I don't take it exactly that way.
I don't care.
Well, the listeners do. They're driving down the Taconic, as you often say, saying, Island, stop it. Ira wants to talk.
I don't think so.
I've always felt about critics of any discipline that you read a critic over the course of time, whether it's movies or food or theater, and then if you see the show, or if you go to the restaurant and you agree with the critic, then you have a benchmark. If you find you've gone several times in a row and you always seem to be agreeing with the critic, you have a benchmark. And so you know that when the critic says something is good, you're more than likely going to agree with them, or vice versa. What I'm sensing is happening here in the Chicago instance is, again, the political nature of the play, and that element is being brought into people's observations and reaching conclusions nothing to do with the actual art.
Well, I don't agree with you, but besides which, I have to say I was standing on the street and people were talking about a play which had been severely trashed by a critic. And she said, well, you know, so-and-so didn't like it. And said, well, Shartok really liked it. He wrote a column about how he really liked it. And the woman said, well, Shartok doesn't know anything.
Well, but therein lies my point. If the wonderful Clarence Fanto of the Berkshire Eagle writes a series of reviews about activities at Tanglewood or wherever, and you find that you disagree with Clarence all along, then okay.
Actually, it wasn't Clarence. I agree with you about his wonderfulness.
Okay.
I just want to make that clear.
Wasn't he a reviewer? Whoever the reviewer.
No, I'm not going to do that.
Okay. Well,
I don't think it's appropriate.
I'm not sure what we went off the rail.
I lost track of that sentence entirely. Never mind. Oh, well, it's the restaurant reviews that get people most fired up. You know, that really annoys folks, but it's also great entertainment. Anyway, more on this later, folks, or on another show at least. Not later in this program because we're out of time.
Oh, no.
Oh, that's true.
This show ought to be an hour.
Alan Shartok, Ira Festival, and Rex Smith. Thanks for joining us for the media.
Are such interesting people. They used to work like hell just for romance, but finally the moon.
The Media Project is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. Alan Chartok is CEO of WAMC, professor emeritus at the State University of New York, commentator, columnist, and author. Rex Smith is editor of the Times Union. And Ira Fussfeld is the publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman. You can listen to or podcast The Media Project anytime at WAMC.org or just download the WAMC app for your iPhone or Android at the Play Store today. Thanks for listening.
Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the world.